You're listening to Minding the Brain with Dr. Kim Hellemans and Dr. Jim Davies. Episode 103, Brain Fog.
Today we're going to talk about brain fog. Jim, have you ever experienced brain fog?
Yeah, I think so. I've had fatigue, lack of enthusiasm. Like, I'm usually like a pretty enthusiastic person. And like, for most of my life, I would just sort of wake up completely excited to face the day or whatever. And then maybe some like minor concentration issues. But for me, I think what I thought felt was mostly kind of motivational. Like, I kind of didn't want to do anything that was difficult. How about you?
Yeah, I think it was, for me, most acute. I felt it when I had COVID the first time. That was probably one of my only symptoms, in fact. Like, the rest of my family had the sore throat and the runny nose. But I just remember feeling this overwhelming sense of fatigue coupled by, like, I just felt like I couldn't think clearly. And then I have what some people might describe as migraines. I don't have migraine disorder because mine are not as horrible as some people I know. But certainly when I get these migraines, these really bad headaches around then, it, like, I can't stop yawning. That's sort of one of my triggers, like, or not triggers, one way I know I'm going to be getting a headache is I just feel like I just have to keep yawning and yawning and yawning, and very tired, very, like, I can't articulate very well. I can't think quickly. Like, I'm usually a very quick thinker. And then after the headache is over, even a day or so later, I just feel this almost like pressure, like somebody's put a very heavy blanket over top of my brain.
Ugh, yeah, that's terrible.
So, you know, I've done a little bit of like my own independent research looking up what causes brain fog. And I know you have as well in prep for this recording. And, you know, part of what I am not sure about is it actually a scientific term?
It kind of, not really. It seems that it's useful in that that's how people like to describe what they're going through, and they report it to doctors. But when you ask them more specifically what they're feeling, it's more broad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even when we were talking about our experiences, it was fatigue, lack of enthusiasm, you know, thinking quickly, concentration issues, and then these like metaphorical things like, oh, I felt like there was like a blanket over my brain or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fog itself is a metaphor, right? Like, fog obscures vision. So it's kind of, or like you're driving in a fog, you're slower, you're more careful. So yeah, it describes things like memory, concentration problems, emotional effects, sometimes low mood, fatigue. Sometimes they say it requires more effort to do a cognitive task. So this is a real thing, like how much mental effort it takes to do something. When people are in a brain fog, often it feels like you're kind of running uphill when it comes to cognitive tasks. You have to put in more effort and energy. But yeah, it's not super well-defined, and it's not really a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of tricky and important for clinicians to separate it from things like depression and fatigue and, you know, losing your mental acuity in general.
Like many things, it probably has a lot of causes, many different ways to mm-hmm. get there. But like, it feels like it's a perception of the state of your own mind and body. Like, it is something I feel.
Yeah, you feel about yourself, right? So, you know, there are a whole lot of perceptions we have of our own internal states. We call them interoceptions, perceptions of your own body and state. Good examples are like itching or being hungry or being like tired and sleepy.
But it is distinct from being sleepy, because although like we both describe, like, I feel tired as part of it, but it is quite different. No?
Yeah. It's very different. You might, like, when you're fatigued, you don't like really feel like you have the energy to do things, but you don't feel like crawling into bed, closing your eyes and literally sleeping. Usually it's just your body wants to rest. It wants to just like lie down and not do anything, but not sleep. And it can be very boring. Like, when I'm sleepy, it's not so bad as long as I can like get into a position where I can go to sleep. But when I'm fatigued, it actually gets quite boring, because my mind wants to be stimulated in a way, but I don't have the energy to do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So anyway, this idea of like this sort of self-perception, it's this idea that you've got this feeling of how much energy you have. So what your mind is making an estimate of how much energy you've got, how much you're going to need. And, you know, based on that, your mind, this is subconscious, right? It makes a decision about how much you need to conserve for the future. Mm-hmm. So if your mind believes that you're going to need a lot of energy coming up, it will make you maybe feel a little bit sluggish to conserve energy. And this is one of the things that they say is why stress makes you feel tired. Yeah. Stress and anxiety are expecting an upcoming energy need, right? Anxiety is about like fear of the future and what could happen. And so when you're expecting this upcoming expenditure, your mind tries to conserve it and it makes you feel tired so that you will rest. Now, another theory holds that like fatigue is a way of your mind trying to get you to do something better, right? So, you know, it's about like, what are your other options out there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, one study found that people could exercise longer when there was a friend around, right? So you had people like run until they couldn't run anymore or whatever it is. And if they have a friend around, they could go a little longer. And, you know, the theory behind this experiment was that our minds are more willing to exploit their energy reserves when we perceive we have help around. Yeah. So like if it's just me, then maybe I ought to save some in the tank. Right. And this is like a subtle thing in your head when you're like doing this running thing. But if you've got a friend around, your mind is like, oh, I've got to back up. I've got support and that kind of thing.
Right. So almost like the mentation, the self-awareness of your energy needs, either having a friend or anticipation of a very like busy time can alter your own brain state and mental state at the time. Because it's almost like using up metabolic resources or not. Yeah.
Right. And you know, and I think it's important to keep this in mind, and we'll talk a bit about this later, but your interoceptions can be incorrect, just like many of your perceptions. So just because you're hungry doesn't mean you need food. And, you know, certain drugs can suppress appetite or increase appetite. So this is something interesting to keep in mind. You know, your mind is making an estimate of how much energy you have and how much you're going to need. And that might not be right.
Mm-hmm. So sensations of fatigue can vary very much moment to moment, which makes any simple biological explanation quite suspect and makes it sound like there's also, like I said, an aspect of psychological appraisal to it, which is, in my opinion, cool.
Yeah. So appraisal theory is this idea that like it's not just an outside stimulus that affects you. It's your judgment of how it aligns with your goals and your values and everything. And, so like getting a lemon is good or bad, depending on whether you want a lemon, among other things. This is part of this theory of brain fog that says that it's about perception, right? So some scientists think that brain fog is about like you think you're in a state. And if you've been in a brain fog for many days or you're in a low state, then your mind expects that you're going to be in a low state in the future. And sometimes if you've got like an ambiguous situation, your mind is just going to perceive that you're still in the same state, even if the thing that triggers the brain fog isn't even there anymore. Mm-hmm. And now this is sort of based on a theory of perception called predictive processing. And it's basically like your mind is constantly trying to anticipate what the world is going to look like. And that speeds processing of perception and everything. But you could have predictive processing for your own state. You think, you know, you're expecting that you're going to be hungry or you're going to be sad or have brain fog. So some scientists have just suggested that sometimes when you're feeling brain fog, it's actually just sort of a hangover from previous brain fog because you are kind of expecting to be in that situation.
Shout out to my student, Mateo, whose favorite theory is the predictive processing theory. And we did.
Oh, it's a popular one, isn't it?
Oh, well, I did my lab group meeting party at my house, and everybody had to do a 5-minute slide presentation on something that they were really passionate about. So it was everything from like racing Ironman to feeding crows. And Mateo taught us about predictive processing theory.
And what's funny is that because he's always talking about it, you probably had predictive processing that he was going to talk about it.
Oh my God. Meta. Anyway, let's pick up like cognitive fatigue, which is a very big part of brain fog. And I know there's some stats that show about 1 in 5 otherwise healthy people complain about feeling tired all the time, which I think, Jim, you've experienced that a bit. And a simple way to think about this, like, because it's important to disentangle brain fog and mental fatigue, because they are very much related. So the way I like to think about it is, like, mental fatigue is like having a low battery, while brain fog is like having poor internet connection. So it's like, one case you're running out of energy, and in the other, your brain isn't processing information as efficiently.
Yeah, I think that that's a decent way to think about it. You know, I don't know if you can trust that when somebody says they have brain fog, they're not talking about low energy. But, you know, I think that's a good way to think about it. We do think about, you know, even fatigue can be broken down, right? So there's mental and physical fatigue.
Yeah, fair.
And although we can distinguish them, there was a study that found that physical effort increased mental fatigue and vice versa. So it's not like they're completely separate fuel tanks in a way. And you know, the what some of our listeners might be thinking is what scientists used to think, which is this very intuitive idea that when you're sort of mentally tired or even brain fog, you're missing some physical resource, like, what is it, glucose or oxygen or something like that. But the evidence didn't really support this idea very well. And I think everyone can kind of intuitively feel that, like, mentally tired people aren't lacking in food usually. I mean, sometimes if I have sugar, I sort of get a burst of energy for a very short time, but generally I'm well fed.
Yeah. I find, like, I'm mentally fatigued if I've had to pay attention to things all day and I haven't had to, like, often say, in a busy working day, I'm never in my own head. Does that make sense? And if I'm always paying attention to other conversations or other people, I find that cognitively draining. And like you said, it's not necessarily I haven't eaten enough. So what exactly is happening? Right. So, like, and brain resource consumption is pretty constant when you're engaging in a cognitively difficult activity. The increase in glucose consumption is not really different from less challenging activities. And in fact, physical exercise uses much more energy, but exercise improves cognitive performance and doesn't deplete it. So there's all these interesting sort of paradoxical elements about trying to explain what it is to be mentally fatigued and therefore brain fog.
So, yeah, I agree. So some people talk about brain fog and this kind of stuff at a cellular level. What do you know about that?
Yeah, so like, let's talk about my favorite organelle, the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell. So there's several plausible theories about what brain fog might mean in terms of low-level biological mechanisms. But interestingly, brain fog might involve different things going on in the brain and the body. And one of the theories is at this subcellular level. So our energy production in the cell is done with that amazing organelle, the mitochondria. And so, you know, there's some suggestion that some forms of fatigue and brain fog ultimately involve mitochondrial stress or impaired cellular energy regulation. So you might remember from, I think it's like grade 10, grade 9 biology, mitochondria, part of how it regulates the energy balance of the cell is about making ATP or adenosine triphosphate. But they don't just make that, they also signal when cells are under stress, and they're actually very important regulators of cell death. If you recall from our previous episode on brain cancers, and in particular glioblastomas, there's a big element of that mitochondria involvement in signaling what's called normal cell death. So anyway, essentially translating into the feeling of brain fog is still speculative. Like, so what exactly has become dysregulated in the mitochondrial function? So that's still in its infancy in terms of understanding that. What we do know is that, no surprise, diet has an impact, right? So eating high sugar diet does increase mitochondrial inefficiency. And so reducing, I would say, high sugar, probably high processed foods as well, might help. And because we know overall diet influences metabolic health and inflammation, we heard that from our dear friend Orsha when we had our conversation about neurotrition. But, you know, we should be cautious because there's not really strong evidence that simply cutting sugar reliably treats brain fog in otherwise healthy people. So as always, things are...
Yeah. And about the energy thing, stress can cause cells to burn through energy even faster, right?
Exactly. About 60% faster. And there's something known as, it's a protein known as growth differentiation factor 15. There's a mouthful for everybody, or GDF15. is released when cells are under stress. And this can happen with injury, infections, illness, under psychological stress. And some scientists have theorized that GDF15 is kind of this general distress signal in the body that leads to this like sense of energy conservation. Like think about somebody who might be like lost in the woods in the wilderness, right? You're having like fatigue, psychological stress. You may not have access to food and water. So there's an important signal in the body that has to happen that says you should probably conserve your energy as best as possible.
Right.
And we do know, interesting as well, it's tied to aging. Your GDF15 levels go up about 25% each decade, sniff, sniff. And as you age, your cells accumulate damage and need more energy for repairs. And hence, GDF15 is released.
So like a high GDF15 is a signal that your brain needs to conserve energy?
Yeah, I would say overall it's a signal of cellular stress. And there's some speculation that that might be the feeling of brain fog, potentially. I don't know.
Yeah. Is there evidence that high GDF15 is present during brain fog states? I know like there's brain fogs associated with migraines. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually quite a few studies that have looked at this to see like if can we kind of correlate brain fog states with perhaps serum levels, so that's part of the blood levels of GDF15. And in fact, there is some papers that show serum levels of GDF15, as well as something known as fibroblast growth factor 21 or FGF21 is also a marker of metabolic activity. These are significantly higher in migraine sufferers compared to healthy controls. So it's, you know, it's associated with, that's the thing about a lot of these kinds of studies, we can't implore causality. It's just there's a relationship there, and it says that we probably need to study that further.
Yeah. We also have a sense that like doing hard cognitive work leads to mental fatigue. So, you know, as you were talking about, your attention flags after time, and I think that's pretty well established.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very well aware of my mental acuity right now, being on a leave. My administrative leave, and I'm going back to my regular duties starting July 1 and remembering what it feels like to have a day just packed with meetings. So one of the other theories is something known as a glutamate theory of mental fatigue. And glutamate is one of the main excitatory neurotransmitters in the human brain. So when glutamate is released, it tends to be associated with excitation of cells, so activation. And we do know that doing high demand cognitive work will increase glutamate levels in parts of your prefrontal cortex where deliberate decision making happens. And so the idea is that excess glutamate might trigger a regulation mechanism that ultimately debilitates cognitive thinking if you're in overload.
So does excess glutamate signal energy conservation too?
Not really. It signals that there needs to be waste clearance to protect the neurons, because too much glutamate is actually neurotoxic to cells. That's actually what's released or starts the neurotoxic cascade during things like concussions. But the effect is the same. So think less until the mess is cleaned up. When the brain is fatigued, it's trying to save energy. And one way it does this is to cut resources to engaging in simple tasks. Hence, like after a super long day, you might be like more inclined to order dinner than make, you know, a 3-course meal, right? So make it simple as possible. So a recent study found that doing cognitively demanding tasks tends to reduce functional connectivity. So that's basically a measure of how two regions of the brain might be talking to one another, like highways in the brain. So if you're doing cognitively demanding tasks, it reduces this connectivity between the frontal and the parietal lobes, which are sort of behind your ears. So these two lobes are very important to work together for cognitive control.
Okay, so you're saying that it cuts energy for simple tasks. So if it's a complex task, the brain kind of rallies and puts out energy, but if it's simple, it's kind of slacks off?
Yeah, so tired people tend to make simple mistakes, even if they can do well at more complex tasks, which is kind of interesting. But for people who aren't in a hospital, so this is important to recognize one of these studies, there's no relationship between a subjective feeling of brain fog and cognitive impairment for people, at least in that study or a recent study that looked at it, and then the context of COVID. So anyway, just inconclusive findings. We have to do more work.
Yeah. Yeah, brain fog is a symptom of long-term COVID. Is there an inflammation aspect to brain fog?
I would say if I had to bet money on what's driving a lot of brain fog, I would say a lot of it is inflammatory factors. So many people do think that neural inflammation is a cause, or like it might be mediating.
Associated.
Yeah, some relationship with brain fog. So general inflammation in the body can get to the brain, particularly during times of stress, which weakens the blood-brain barrier, our body's or natural fail-safe mechanism to prevent a lot of things from getting from the periphery up into the brain. So when you have a lot of inflammation and you're stressed, it can get up into the brain, and this can be associated with cognitive symptoms. And some studies have not necessarily found clear evidence of ongoing neuroinflammation in brain fog. So it could be that it might be like a pre-existing or precipitating factor, but not necessarily maintaining the brain fog. So it might be one pathway. It could be a link in the chain. Yeah, there's just lots of work that clearly needs to be done. And of course, in COVID, that was one of the main features that people talked about. I mentioned my own acute COVID, and then in long-term COVID, people talk about brain fog. And we know that COVID is marked by the cytokine storm, which is the production of lots of these inflammatory signaling molecules in the brain and the body.
Wow. It's quite a mess. There's a lot going on with brain fog. How about hormones? Are they relevant?
Yeah.
I'm hearing that menopause is associated with increased brain fog. Is that true?
Yeah, we're starting to get, thankfully, a lot more attention being paid to women's health. And thankfully, some of that attention is translating to some studies that are looking at, you know, the perimenopausal period, even during menstruation, and recognizing that when women are saying that they feel tired and they're experiencing brain fog, that this isn't necessarily something that needs to be dismissed, and maybe we need to look more into it. So there's a lot of evidence that hormones are implicated in brain fog. So changes in estrogen and progesterone, which are the main hormones that are found in biologic females, thyroid hormones, which is involved in our basic metabolic functioning, and cortisol, your main hormone involved in stress. So all of these things can affect cognitive performance depending on their delicate balance. And of course, they talk to one another. So if you're highly stressed and you also have hypothyroid disorder, and or you're fluctuating, you're on your specific stage of your menstrual cycle, you're in perimenopause, these things can all have sort of an additive effect. And of course, this is why brain fog is commonly reported during menopause, pregnancy, periods of high stress, and in thyroid disorders.
Wow. So there's, yeah, brain fog is not simple. There's all kinds of stuff going on. And what can people do to reduce brain fog? Is there evidence about that?
Oh, yeah. There's not a lot of clinical evidence associated with, we started talking at the beginning of the episode. It's not really a scientific term, and people don't really understand it too much. So hopefully there'll be more work to fully understand it. But it all boils down, whatever we do know boils down to those key lifestyle factors. So adequate sleep, reducing stress as best as possible, reducing symptoms of anxiety and depression. These things seem to be the most important things. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, diet. So there's some suggestion too, adequate hydration can have a difference. So anything that is like physiologically stressful on the body might increase susceptibility to brain fog. So if you're dehydrated and you're not eating well and you haven't slept well and you're susceptible to migraines, or, you know, all these things probably work together. So as best as we can, and I know it's really hard because behavior change is hard, try to take care of yourself. And then of course, seek out, you might need some additional support from a healthcare provider to manage some of these symptoms.
So a lot of these things sound like things you should be doing anyway.
Yeah, I know. I feel like every lesson is about that. Lifestyle factors, right?
Eat, exercise, sleep, get mental health treatment. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we know our listeners are already doing all those great things. So keep it up, people.
Absolutely. All our listeners are well informed.
Minding the Brain is gratefully sponsored by Carleton University's Faculty of Science and our endocannabinoid systems for helping to regulate important functions like mood and appetite. If you find this show valuable and you want to support Minding the Brain, consider leaving us a review or rating on your podcast app of choice. Leaving a review or rating increases our visibility and helps new listeners discover the show. You can find us on TikTok and Instagram at Minding the Brain, and you can find us on YouTube at Minding the Brain Podcast. You can also find more episodes and show notes at our website, mindingthebrainpodcast.com. Thank you for listening to Minding the Brain.